Hi, I'm Liz Larson.
And I'm Bill McKenna. We're the hosts of the New Life Perspectives radio show.
We're also the creators of the Cogno Movement System, where we help you rewire your nervous system so you can rewire your reality.
Join us each week for great conversations, amazing guests, and cutting-edge information on health, consciousness, and the keys to transformation.
Are there ancient healing modalities that have been hidden from us? Are there secrets that can unlock both anti-aging and sometimes instant healing? Well, our guest today says yes, and he is a man after our own heart. This is the message that Bill McKenna and I are talking about all the time, is ways that the body can heal itself on its own. And so today I want to introduce a person whose mission is to tap into the body's innate wisdom and to unlock regenerative abilities. Today we welcome Nick Urban. Hey, Nick.
Liz, thank you so much for the warm welcome. Great to be here today.
Yeah, tell everybody about yourself.
Well, it's hard to know where to begin that story, but I will start with, I have long since believed that humans are able to alter the way that we live, the way we perform, the way that our health transpires by modifying the internals and externals. And when I was in school, I was studying neuroscience originally, and there were a bunch of unanswered questions in neuroscience related to molecules and pathways. I noticed that what would come out in the headlines would one day say that this certain substance, this modality, was a cure-all, it was perfect, it was the thing that everyone should be using. And then shortly thereafter, it would become this substance that everyone knew, and I say in air quotes, that it was a bad thing and it was actually banned. And so I was wrestling with that conundrum of like, how can the scientific community agree on these particular things today and then tomorrow completely disagree on all these things? So there's a lot of great that comes out of modern science. But then I started looking into alternative perspectives. What out there could explain the way that humans have avoided certain conditions and they have been healthy, they have accomplished incredible feats without what we have today? And if you take out the deaths via issues with sanitation and the deaths that occurred during the childbearing years, they actually lived a remarkably long and healthy life. So I looked into other systems, modalities, and came across Chinese medicine, started reading a book on that, and then I discovered Ayurveda. And to me, that seemed like it's actually the word Ayurveda translates to the science of life or the science of longevity. And the more I looked into it, the more I realized they had a lot of answers to problems that we face today. And they were the pioneers of things like light therapy and metabolic health and the gut microbiome, living in tune with nature and the seasons. They had all of these like frameworks and processes and knowledge that are also becoming hot topics only today with the best and latest modern science.
That's absolutely fascinating. You know, it's like, I already feel like, okay, hold on. We need to clear our calendar and talk for the rest of the day. Because I know Liz is feeling that too. It's how exciting. Well, you help a lot of people globally and have been, you know, one of those latest craze type things is, you know, biohacking or also, you know, longevity, if I pronounce that right. And are there any things that you can share with us? Like, I know, you know, there's been research on blue zones, you know, mm-hmm. longevity in blue zones. That was one amazing study that people had common denominators in certain areas, like their diet and also their social support within their community and feeling as if they were of service to another, which really ends up creating these centurions, you know, people live past 100. But I'm so curious about what you've discovered, what it the science of life, that you've discovered or rediscovered around this topic. What are the common things that you know for sure about living longer and better?
Yeah, so great point there. And you mentioned biohacking. That is actually where I cut my teeth with all this. I realized that there's a lot of solutions out there. Some of them will do well, some of them will fail over time. And I can look at statistical averages across the entire population that we see in a lot of medical research, or I can look at that plus looking at what's going on in my own body, and I can start measuring myself. And by measuring myself, I can hopefully optimize that which I'm measuring. So that was how I got involved in biohacking to begin with. But the longer I stayed around biohacking, I realized, you know what? Hacking in general, whether it's biology or computers, has its downsides. It doesn't work over the long term. And in fact, usually over the long term, it backfires. So then I came across the concept, actually, I coined the concept bioharmonizing, where I'm working with my biology to get better outcomes. Because one of the things that the old systems showed is that, like, if you have a particular symptom, instead of viewing this as your body is breaking down and it's dysfunctioning, it's malfunctioning, that symptom can also be viewed through a different perspective of like, okay, there's something going wrong in my body, and this symptom is expressing that, and it's like the check engine light on the dashboard. Now that I see this, I can adjust my lifestyle, what I'm intaking, and as a result of that, I can actually address what's causing the symptom, not the symptom itself, which will naturally resolve when the underlying cause is addressed. So that was the lens that I started realizing is much more effective, because biohacking can be, for a lot of people, just like, what is the latest technology I can use? What is the substance, the molecule, the designer supplement that I can ingest? And those things have their time and place. But if we go back to the blue zones now, they were not doing a lot of this stuff. They were not doing a lot of the longevity practices and protocols that we now know. In fact, they were sometimes smokers, and the smokers would themselves would live into the late 90s, early hundreds, a little beyond that. And so it became clear that there's a lot more to the story than just some of the things that we're focused on in terms of like modern health and longevity. Diet, it seems like that's one of the big focuses that everyone talks about. But when you look at the blue zones, if you include other long-lived populations around the world that aren't actually in the original blue zones research, some of the common factors between their diets start to become a little more blurry. They're not quite as clean cut as the original research showed. And there's like so much dietary dogma out there that like you can find research and you can find populations to justify just about any conclusion. But it seems that the things that we don't even really fully understand yet, including some of the things we also do understand, such as like the importance of social community, and having like a good tribe that supports you, and things like probably the environment that you live in terms of like the social environment, but then also like the physical, chemical environment, what is there and what is not there. So many other factors are going to have massive impacts on the way we age and how gracefully or lack thereof.
You know what's super interesting about this is that if you look at the cultures they're studying, they're vastly different in food than the United States in this one thing. And that is, we eat everything. We eat every kind of culture's food. We might eat Italian, Asian, and American in a day. And other countries, so my family is Italian, Sicilian. And when I go, and when I first started going, I was shocked that really they ate pasta twice a day. They just ate pasta. Like, you didn't go out to Mexican food. I mean, in the big cities you can, but they don't go out to Mexican food. They go out to Italian food, just stuff that their family wouldn't, necessarily make at home. It takes a long time, one of those things. So I always found that very interesting in visiting different cultures and how they tend to utilize the same foods over and over again, but in a balanced way. And they're not food crazy. They take time to enjoy their food. There is a social aspect to their food. They often will tend to go for a walk after that food. They are encouraged, not only encouraged, but it's part of their social structure to enjoy the food they have. Like our family, while they're eating, we'll talk about the next meal they're making, right? They're very food interested and they enjoy food, but they're not tortured by it. And in the US, this is one of the things. We're very tortured by food. And you were saying that, you know, there's these new biohacks that come out, right? And then there's a whole industry that builds around that biohack. And that's the thing you need. And it's completely taken out of context for all of the other things. So I think some of the cultures that they're investigating that do have these centenarians are that there is a very holistic, they walk, they get a lot of fresh air. Maybe those cigarettes they smoke are tobacco that they've rolled, and we now know that nicotine has some positive effects. So I find that very interesting. It's one of those things that's like, oh, you need to eat just kelp. That's going to save your life because the Japanese do that. But the Japanese do a whole lot of things that aren't just one thing. So what do you think about that, about things being just taken out of context?
Yeah, you're spot on there for so many different ways and reasons. Because, like, even just that last example of the seaweed, it's like you also need to have the gut microbiome that's capable of breaking down and transmuting the different, like, nutrients within that seaweed into their constituents, which have the so-called beneficial effects. But, like, that's just one of the factors. One of the things I like to talk about when evaluating really any health intervention, it is to break down the, I guess, five W's, the who, what, when, where, why, and I guess you could also add how into that. So if you're taking the example of eating a meal, it's not just what you're eating or even how much of it you're eating, but it's also like who are you eating it with? Like what's your mood and your mental state, your emotional state going into that meal? Why are you eating? Are you eating because you're hungry or are you eating because you're stressed? And it's like, okay, if you're stressed, perhaps do something that you can to reduce the stress first, put yourself into a more parasympathetic, like rest and digest state, you'll get better results out of the food. You'll have less of a blood sugar spike, less of an inflammatory response from the food, and it only takes a minute or so. And there's like, you can look at all the different health practices through those lenses to make sure you're doing things properly, because really the context is the missing link between something being healthy and something being unhealthy.
Yeah, it's a crazy thing. In our culture, it's low fat. That's the way to go. Then the next time, it's low carb. That's the way to go, right? Then the next thing, it's no, it's all the carbs without the fat, right? And now it's all the meat, just meat. That's all you do, just meat. And it started to occur to me, there were some stories that I loved when I was a kid. And they were about the Swiss Alps and this grandfather and the granddaughter. And they would sit out, he was a goat herder, and they would sit out and they would have a chunk of bread and some cheese. And I think he would have wine. And, you know, and he was very, very, very old. And this is what people ate. And now those are the two foods in the American culture that are the devil. The devil. They will ruin your life. And yet that's what people ate for years and years and years. I mean, decades, not just decades, sorry, millennia, really. Our genetics are built on a lot of that. And so now in our culture, we're like, that's the devil. Don't eat it. Don't get close to it. So I think a big part of it in the States anyway, is this crazy making that there is about what to eat, when to eat it, how to eat it. We don't even think about who to eat it with or whether or not we should be relaxed. Many years ago, there was a breath that I used a lot called the Nuvali breath. I don't know if you're familiar, but it was encouraged to do it 45 minutes before you ate to get your stomach ready. It rolls up into the stomach and you hold it tight and then let it out and really floods the body with oxygen. But one of the ideas was that it was preparing the body to actually eat. And if a person did that, they would have much better digestion and, you know, start to lose weight. So I thought that was very interesting. So let's take our very first break. We'll hear from the good folks at the UK Health Radio Network. And when we come back, we'll hear what you have to say about that, Nick.
Yeah,
UK Health,
perfect.
take it away.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Apples and pears, beef and Skittles, Cider with Rosie, Common or Garden, Ant and Deck, Fish and Chips, Mum and Dad.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle Magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better. Add Health Triangle Magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com. Strawberries
and cream. A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
And we're back. We are talking with Nick Urban about all things health related and how to tap into your body's own regenerative abilities. So what do you think about that? Making us crazy, being part of our health problems in the US?
Yeah, I have a couple of thoughts on that, and specifically the certain foods that were long staples of the human diet and of like society that are now like public enemy number one, number two, and number three, such as, I mean, bread, like gluten and wine, all these types of things. And even your example earlier of like smoking cigarettes, like the context there is important also. And people are having more issues with those things today than they were previously, partially because of the current state of health around the country and the world. But then also it's because of the way we're actually preparing those substances, the foods and substances, like even the tobacco, we're now like heavily processing it. We're spraying all kinds of chemicals and radioactive isotopes and stuff like that onto it. And so is it really the tobacco that's causing the issue, or is it the combination of all of the different chemicals combined into one and then combusted at a really high temperature, then inhaled and held for a long period of time that's causing the majority of the effects there? Controversial, but then less controversial are like the things, the ways we're processing like wheat and grains. We used to use stone milling, and now we use steel milling, which concentrates the gluten and other proteins in those grains. And that can aggravate certain like sensitive constitutions, and as well as the other biocides that we're spraying on top of them, like those can create a slight immune response. So then every time you're consuming it, you have more of an immune response and more inflammation than you would otherwise, which is why some people can go to countries where these things are banned and they can eat all of the gluten, all the pasta, all of the bread they want and feel totally fine afterward.
Yeah. And they still make some things like in Italy, they use a whole grain and it's slightly fermented, the bread. They call it pane di latte or milk bread, but it's got this whole it's really not an unprocessed, but it's an unhybridized grain that people can eat with zero issues. And in the States, that's something we strip away the grain, strip away all the healthy enzymes, all the things the body needs to actually process that food. And then we bleach it, not to mention all the chemicals that you're talking about. And then one other thing about the cigarettes that I find super interesting is now tobacco is a really popular scent. Did you know this?
Yes.
Like for candles and for cologne and all of that. And if you've ever been around a person who just rolls their own cigarettes and tobacco leaves, it has this kind of lovely aroma. Yeah. But if you're around a person who smokes modern cigarettes, they stink to high heaven. Yeah. I mean, even our noses know the difference.
Yeah, that's a good point. There is a big difference. And part of it's also just like the combustion itself. Like when you do that, you're changing the profile completely. But then also it's the combination of other stuff that's going into the tobacco before you even light it up that is changing the profile further.
Yeah.
Have you seen that a documentary? I think it was either on National Geographic or the Discovery Channel about Mr. Overton that lived to 115 years old. Have you seen that?
I haven't seen that one, but there are people on record who have lived to 115, a couple that have lived into the beginning of the 120s, and there's like rumors and apparently passport verified people who have lived well beyond that. It's an interesting world when you start looking into how long, like there's a theoretical limit of like living humans living to 123, but we'll see how much of a limit that really is.
I think I think you're right, and it especially in some other cultures, there seems to be people that have lived well in excess of those figures. But here in the United States of Americas, for which we stand, one nation under God, Mr. Overton, in this documentary, he's there, and I think he lives in Missouri, and they walk through his day, and he gets up. I say he gets up. He's a black guy that I think in World War II he served, and he still drives himself. He not only was driving himself, he has a girlfriend. He gets up whenever he gets up, and he says, "Well, I drink about 4 cups of whiskey today." And I and about how many ever cups of coffee. He loves canned food, and he says he smokes cigars, but he does it, quote unquote, the healthy way. And he says, I don't inhale, but he enjoys many cigars per day. But the thing about him is, oh yeah, and he says, every night, get this, he has pecan ice cream. He eats a bunch of pecan ice cream. And he was so interesting because the concept here was that, he had community. He loved to go sing and go to church, and he was social, and he had cats that he would take care of, meaning he'd feed him a little bit, So he had somebody to care for, something to care for, social network. And the thing that I took away from this, I mean, it will just every you gotta Google this, Mr. Overton, 109 or 119 years, 100 and I think 15, or he may have passed away even older than that, but he did pass away recently. But it was beautiful because his enjoyment. There was he liked his cups of whiskey. He loved he had his canned foods he loved. He loved smoking his cigars. He did things that brought him pleasure, and he was independent. And it was amazing his thought process, how he thought. It just flew in the face of everything. I mean, come on now. If I drink 4 cups of whiskey a day, I'm going to be feeling it. I can't do. I could maybe do that one day, but not 2 days. So anyway, I find it fascinating how the our happiness intertwines molecularly. What do you know about that?
There's a lot of like avenues to explore there. I mean, one of the big things that I've learned in my studies of health is like one of the first things you want to do with clients when you're working with them is identify their, I don't want to say purpose, their North Star, like what lights them up, what brings joy to their day, to their life. Like what's the thing that lights them up? And if you can't find that, then you look at like what is the thing that drags them down the fastest? Because some people just have no idea. And it might be something that doesn't appear on paper to be good for health, but if it's creating so much joy and meaning in their life, it doesn't matter. You can get by on less sleep and you can get by on a lot of suboptimal behaviors and diets and routines if it's actually like lighting you up and it's just like putting your body into a different state in a lot of different levels. And I mean, some people have the specific gene that helps them get by with less sleep. It's like a tiny fraction of the population. And aside from that, like knowing your purpose, knowing, actually, not even just knowing, finding your purpose, like what excites you, put your body into a more coherent state. And if you actually use like an EEG device to measure brainwaves and you're thinking about the things that light you up, whatever that is, you can actually see your brain go into a more coherent state. If you measure your heart rate variability with something like a heart math device, you can see your brain heart coherence going into a more coherent state. And that alone, plus like the placebo effect of like following your dreams, your passions and everything, that will elevate your biology.
Oh, that's fascinating. So, I love that you're working both ends of the stick, right? You know, what is it that you want and what is it you don't want, you know? And the very interesting science of creating that heart-brain coherence. We work with HeartMath and actually involved in a study with them right now with cognitive movement. So we love those guys over there. And there's one other interesting thing I wanted to ask you about was your comments on there's a guy out there, I don't know if he was a billionaire, but certainly a 100 millionaire plus. And he exited a couple of companies, got himself a lot of money, and he decided he was going to reverse age. And he did. I think you've seen him kind of look. I mean, he looks a little better today, but during the process, you were like, oh my God, what's going on with that guy? It doesn't look good. You know, but he looks a little better today. But during the process, I looked at it and I was like, oh no, something's amiss. But anyway, he's got some sort of offering or something that he's doing some supplements where he had researched significantly all these different ways, the hyperbaric chamber or getting certain IVs. And oh my God, it was like he was spending millions of dollars to try to reverse his age. So is it possible to reverse your age? Is this real science? What is your thoughts on that?
So yeah, I'm very familiar with the individual you're mentioning, and he does claim that he's reversed his age, and he's one of the few humans in history, if any, aside from him, that have actually accomplished that according to him. Then again, like, you have to define how you're reversing age. To him, he's talking about biological age measurement, which is essentially measuring how fast you're aging cellularly compared to your calendar age. When you and I talk about age, we're talking about calendar age, how long you've been on this planet. You can also look and see how well are your organs in your body functioning. And that gives you what's called your biologic age. So you can figure out, okay, I was biologically 5 years older than my calendar age previously. Now I'm 5 years younger. So that's a swing of 10 years. And therefore I reversed age. But then again, you have to figure out that measurement you're using. How accurate is that clock, that measurement clock that tells you your biological age? And there's a lot of debate in the scientific community about the validity of those tests. There are certain ones that are more valid than others. I actually did an experiment about 2 months ago where I took a bunch of, I think it was 7 different of those tests using different technologies, different companies, different products on the same day within like a couple hour span of each other just to see if they were consistent at all. And my calendar age at the time was 30, and the high end said that I was 38, so I was 8 years older than my actual calendar age. On the low end, I was 24. So you can see there's a huge spread there. And most of them clustered around younger than my calendar age, my biological age being younger, but not all of them. So you have to know which one you're using. Is this test accurate to begin with? And then you can get into like, okay, all these cool, fancy protocols, they have merit in some ways and not in others. And then like, can you create a universal protocol that will work for everyone to reverse their aging? And that seems to me, it's like, if you're telling people to consume the nutrients they need, that's a good thing. If you're telling them to do these fringe therapies that have literally one study behind them and on a very small sample size, such as some of the gene therapies, which he also participated in, that seems a bit cavalier, a little riskier. Like, you don't actually know what's going to be the long-term consequence of these things because there's only like very preliminary data around them. And so that's where like my framework of bioharmony comes into play. It's like, what's the potential upside of this therapy? what is the potential downside? If I'm taking like a simple B vitamin, probably gonna be pretty safe. If I'm, especially if I'm deficient in B vitamins, I might notice a huge change in overall health and performance versus an experimental gene therapy, a lot less known there.
Yeah, I mean, it's true. So many of the things that he's doing, and just to be fair, he is claiming that it is an experiment, but there's so many things happening at once. How do you say which thing is making that change? I mean, I heard him talk about once actually taking plasma from his son and having and using it on his own body. I mean, that seems a little like being a vampire to me, which, you know, maybe that's how you do stay young, become a vampire, right? All the TV shows show that. And in fact, I mean, maybe that's what he's doing, but it's so many things, and it's out of context. What kind of a life is that? For him, it's probably very interesting, but that's what his whole life is about, is this anti-aging thing. And for most humans on the planet today, one, they're not interested in spending their life doing that. They couldn't afford it if they would. Many of the things he's doing, probably ethically, people would not do to themselves. So that is my question. I think it's very interesting, and I don't dun him for doing it. But is it actually resourceful for the rest of humanity? And to your point, might it be better to go back to ancient wisdom, the ways people ate, the ways people moved, and the ways people gathered? So let's take our second break here. We'll hear from the good folks at the UK Health Radio Network. And when we come back, let's hear what you actually prescribe for people. What is your idea of health in, 2025? UK Health Radio, take it away.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Optimizing your health and well-being is on your to-do list? Then let Revive Active, Ireland's number one super supplement brand, help you achieve that in the most convenient and comprehensive way possible. Clean, premium ingredients scientifically formulated to work in synergy to support immunity, energy, joints, heart health, sleep, emotional balance, and more. Benefit from the power, purity, and positivity of our award-winning powder sachets or our therapeutic capsule range. Use code RADIO15 at reviveactive.com and save 15% off today. Super supplements for a super you.
Cappuccino, latte, Americano, flat white, macchiato.
Just imagine, for less than the price of a single cup of coffee out on the high street, you could enjoy an award-winning online magazine every month with up-to-the-minute information on health and healthy lifestyle. Sounds like a good trade-off? Check out Health Triangle magazine on the UKHealthRadio.com website. Just sacrifice a single cup of coffee every month.
Let's all put health first.
The station that makes you feel good.
And we're back. We're talking with Nick Urban about modern science and ancient wisdom.
Yeah, Liz. So first, to be clear, I am not a doctor. I don't prescribe anything. But in general, I think health is one of those things that can look different depending on the person you're talking to health about. For some people, it's living a short life and doing all these things, and it's going to mean sacrificing sleep inherently and doing these things that are not in their best interest for longevity, but it is for their performance. Obviously, I don't work with as many of those people as the ones who want to perform well and also to live a long time. But like, first of all, understanding where is the destination that you're trying to go is the first step. And then it's reverse engineering. What kind of life do you want to live? Do you want to spend all your resources, all your time, all your energy on eking out that last little 1% of performance, such as Olympians do physically, and then such as certain business people do to create life-changing inventions that revolutionize the world? So there's a whole spectrum there. And it's starting by understanding where you want to go and then making sure that each of the different components of health, whether it's your sleep routine, whether it's your movement and exercise routine, all of those support you in that goal, in that direction.
Yeah. I mean, that makes a lot of sense. More of a holistic look at the whole life. And to Bill's point, Mr. Overton, his whole life was about, sounded like him enjoying life. And in 2025, with all of the advanced science we have, all of the technologies, all of the manufactured supplements, we have on average people being overweight, far more overweight than they've ever been in history, more cancer. But the huge one is far more neurological problems. It's now 1 in 28 with autism. 1 in 4 children have a neurological problem. Alzheimer's is through the roof. And then let's stack onto that, depression. Depression. I remember working in a grocery store. I was in my early 20s. I worked as a cake decorator. And there were, I think, 12 people, 12 other women who worked in that bakery. And I was the only one who was not on antidepressants. Now, that's been about 1,000 years ago. And that number, I think, has increased. So many people are on antidepressants. And the kind of antidepressants are so prevalent. So what would you say about that aspect? Let's just isolate the neurological and the psychological aspect of what we are experiencing in health these days.
Yeah, so the two are obviously very interrelated. Like, there's a big biological mismatch today between the way that we're living and the way we were living even just as little as 100 years ago or less. And so in a couple of generations, you went from like not even knowing what the word organic was because it didn't exist. All food was organic. Like, my grandpa does not really understand the concept of organic because he just goes to the grocery store and buys food. Food is food. And now you have to be more discerning when it comes to that kind of thing. But also, like, that applies in so many different ways. Like, the way that we live today, most of us are indoors most of the time. We're completely cut off from nature. And like, a lot of these symptoms, these conditions, they arise from that mismatch, not just one or two things, but across the board, many different things, many exposures, many deficiencies. There's a researcher named Dr. James DiNicolo Antonio, and he cited in his book that the average American is deficient in, I guess 30% of Americans are deficient in 10 or more minerals. And minerals are the spark plugs of life. And so if you're deficient in one mineral, it can wreak havoc on your entire health. When you're deficient in 10 or more essential nutrients, like, you can see why the body would start to break down and is actually incredibly resilient given the way that we're able to survive and continue on for years and decades within those like deficient states.
Yeah, that is super true. We got the great opportunity to interview Dr. David Brownstein. I don't know if you're familiar with him. Mm-hmm. Iodine and salt, just two minerals that every cell in the body needs. And what are we told to do? Limit salt. And what kind of salt are we given? Salt that is two kinds of poisons. Our table salt is poison. And what do we not have unless we really seek it out is real salt anymore. You know, salt was so valuable. If we look back to ancient wisdom, that's where the word salary comes from. It was so valuable. People need it. And there's, if you ever read or listen to books that are like post-apocalyptic, post-nuclear, you know, that is the thing people need is salt, right? And we've removed it from our diet, and iodine has been removed from our diet. So if we go back to bread alone, in food processing, iodine was used as a conditioner for bread. It extended the life of the bread. So it was a little bit of a preservative, but it also conditioned it so that it was a little more pliable. And that was in all of our food. And then it was replaced with bromelain. And bromelain clogs your thyroid and prevents your absorption of iodine. So it makes me wonder, Nick, what do you think? Is it just my conspiracy brain? Or do we think maybe this has been done to us intentionally?
Yeah, I mean, it's a grim situation, a grim reality that like our food supply these days is not supportive of overall health. And really, every time I go in the grocery store and I wander down the aisles, when I'm not shopping the perimeter, which is where a lot of the healthy food is, like the middle of the aisles, you'll pull out a bag of this or that, you'll look at the back of it, and you'll see all kinds of chemicals and additives. And it's unfortunate because like your average person, no one actually should have to look and figure out how much, like what's the ratio of nutrients to chemicals that I'm consuming in this product. And sadly, that's kind of where we are, where it's like, that's necessary now. But what I like to do, I like to advocate for the minimum viable approach here. And I will buy a brand that I know based on my observation of the label. You can probably even use AI now to like scan the label and figure out, are these ingredients healthy? Are any of these unhealthy? And get some guidance there. But then it's like, I know that for the next couple months, at least, I have a free pass because I've already vetted this product. I know it's safe. I don't need to spend time every single week reanalyzing, because a lot of the products are fortified with things, and it seems like a great idea. Okay, let's just add some extra calcium to this, some folic acid to this over here. We can add all these nutrients back in, but they tend to be like the cheap synthetic forms of the nutrients. And unfortunately, the body doesn't always process them the same as it does the bioavailable forms found in foods naturally. So unfortunately, it's become increasingly important to actually make sure you're getting a wide variety of nutrients from high quality foods. And eating organic doesn't have to be expensive. Like I ran the numbers of like, if you take a Snickers bar and you multiply that by the cost per pound of Snickers, at least here in Austin, it's more expensive than the grass-fed, grass-finished ground beef that I get from Whole Foods. So there's ways of making it cheaper, even though it might seem like the sticker price is high.
And it also seems like when you eat real whole food that doesn't have a lot of additives, just, you know, plain meat or plain fruit, or something we've been looking into lately is freshly milled grain. That's a whole rabbit hole. It's amazing. You eat far less. You don't have this craving, you know, where a person could maybe eat a whole bag of Cheetos. You're not going to eat a whole bag of apples. You're just not. You feel more satisfied. There's everything in that, if it's an organic apple, that you need to process and digest it. So in the long run, I think most people find that there's a sticker shock at first, but you stop buying all the other things that add up to quite expensive. So do you find that to be true as well?
Yeah. And there's certain things that are more important than others to get that are getting the organic form, like the so-called dirty dozen are the like most sprayed crops, at least in the US. And then the clean 15 are the ones that are the least sprayed. The EWG comes up with those lists every year. So you can use that as a guidepost. Of course, it's going to behoove you to get the most high quality food you possibly can. But even once you have the food, like if you can't get the highest quality food, then look at other ways of like remedying the situation. Like, for example, a lot of the ancient cultures knew that you want to process your unprocessed food in ways to make it more digestible and to unlock certain nutrients to get rid of the so-called anti-nutrients. And those were done via processes like sprouting and fermentation, soaking. I think in South America, they would even use the water they would soak quinoa in as detergent because it had such powerful like cleaning properties.
Oh, wow. I've never heard that. Super interesting. What about rice? So Ayurveda is Indian, mm-hmm. right? An Indian practice. And they eat a lot of rice. And so do many of the Asian cultures, which in the US, that's a big no-no, no rice. So there must be something they're doing differently with eating that amount of rice and carbohydrates that we are not. Do you know what it is?
Yeah. So on that front, there's a couple of differences. The big one being that they, on average, tolerate starches better than people born in, I guess, non-cultures where rice isn't a staple in the diet. It's like over a long time, you create more amylase and different like enzymes that help break down that starch more effectively, that glucose more effectively. And so it has less impact. And they can even see us by measuring blood sugar. The same person, two different people eating the same amount of rice can have vastly different like glucose responses from that same food, but they will also often pair it with other things to help manage the spike. And in Ayurveda, there are even three different like bodily constitution types. They call them pitta, which is like fire water combo, vata, which is air and ether, and kapha, which is water and earth. And it's like each of those types is going to respond to rice and really any food differently. So even in India, certain parts of India, like North India, for example, rice is less common and the wheat-based products are more common. So you can see right there that that entire like portion of the country is skewing more in one direction than another. But even down to the individual level, you can see that there's big response differences. And so the Ayurvedic system accommodates for that and helps people choose the right foods based on what their metabolic type is now the new Western terminology around this same phenomenon is best suited for.
So if people want to know more about you, Nick, and more about your work and your research, where is the best place to find you?
My website is called outlier.com and it's misspelled intentionally. That's O-U-T-L-I-Y-R. But because I want to make it easier for your listeners, you can also find me at nickurban.me.
Okay. And you have a podcast, correct?
And my podcast is the High Performance Longevity Podcast, where I show that although they're often placed on opposite ends of the spectrum, performance and longevity, there's actually a big in-between zone there. And you can live a long time doing the things you love at the highest level with some simple tools and tweaks.
And actually, if you're hearing this broadcast and you want to hear more, you can actually find our friend Bill McKenna, who did an episode with Nick Urban pretty recently. So that's a fun crossover. Anything else you'd like to leave the audience with today, Nick, before we go?
Thank you all for tuning in. It's been a pleasure chatting with you guys. And I want to leave on the note of you guys are all tuning in right now, have the ability to take control of your health and tune into the messages your body's giving you to really transform and become the best versions of yourself.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for being here. Thanks for being with us, Bill McKenna.
Thank you. Thank you, Nick. Thank you, Liz.
Awesome. And until next time, be safe and be well.
Thanks for being here with us on the New Life Perspective Radio Show. For more information, or to find out more about the work that Bill and I do, please visit us at cognomovement.com or email us at info@cognomovement.com. See you again soon.